we're gonna take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound. Break it
down. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. Up first, on this week's show, I'll speak with the drummer and composer Stuart Copeland, a co-founder of the legendary British rock band The Police. Copeland will bring his Police, Deranged for Orchestra tour, to Central Indiana on October 19th. And on the second half of the show, I'll be joined by the Indianapolis hip-hop producer Harry Otaku. We'll celebrate the Halloween season by listening to tracks from his horror-themed album, It Tape. Stuart Copeland will join me in a moment, but first, let's hear a classic track from The Police. Off their 1981 album, Ghost in the Machine, this is Spirits in the Material World. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. Stuart Copeland is best known as the co-founder and drummer of The Police. The British rock band sold over 75 million records and won 5 Grammy Awards. Copeland is also a prolific composer and arranger. He scored over 50 films and composed multiple operas and symphonic works. His latest project, Police, Deranged for Orchestra, brings both of these worlds together. The album features Copeland's orchestral arrangements of 10 classic Police tracks. Copeland will bring his Police, Deranged for Orchestra tour to the Palladium in Central Indiana on October 19th. The performance will include 3 vocalists and a 28-piece orchestra. I recently spoke with Stuart Copeland via Zoom. We started the conversation by discussing his late 1980s project, Animal Logic, a collaboration with the jazz bassist Stanley Clark. Let's join our conversation. Stuart, thank you so much for taking time to speak with WFYI today. I'm a big fan of your work, and it's great to speak with you.
Well, it's great to be here with you.
As we get started, I have kind of a left field question for you. A lot of my work as a music journalist revolves around the history of jazz in Indianapolis. And one of our greatest jazz heroes in Indianapolis is Freddie Hubbard. And I believe,
I believe
you had an opportunity to record with Freddie in 1989 on your album with Animal Logic. Is that right? And did you work with him personally on that album?
That is correct. He showed it. He's a friend of Stanley Clark, another jazz legend, and he showed up. And hello, nice to meet you. Standy handed him an envelope with $1,000. which he put into his, he opens up his trumpet case, puts it in, pulls out his trumpet with a big smile, says, okay, what would you like? And he played an amazing solo for us.
Love is an ocean, I barely can swim. So scared of drowning, I grab onto a whim.
Sounds very transactional, but did that mean anything to you at the time?
Well, no, it's that kind of culture.
Yeah.
Because I think black musicians are just so used to getting ripped off that show me the money.
Yeah.
Was the vibe. But as soon as that's all settled, it was all art.
Yeah, yeah. Did that mean anything to you? Were you a fan? Had you followed his music at all as a young person?
Not really. I'm not a jazz fan. I was raised to be a jazz musician, which is why I'm kind of immune to the stuff. I don't hate it or anything, but it just doesn't do anything for me. I was raised on wrong jazz, which might explain it. I was raised on white big band jazz, you know, Stan Kenton and such. Although I did get Buddy Rich, I totally get Buddy Rich. But that's the jazz I was raised on. And of course, my buddy Stanley tells me, no, dude, wrong jazz.
Yeah.
And so it just doesn't have any emotional impact on me. I'm not impressed by how many notes they can play or how f-ed up their chords are.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work for me. I much prefer blues.
Mm-hmm.
Now, blues, there's nowhere to hide. You've either got soul, you've either lived a life or not. And you need to have lived a life to make that one note mean something. In jazz, just wiggle your fingers and you can get away with anything. It's a smokescreen.
On the subject of jazz, when the Police formed, each of you brought very distinct and individual influences to the project. Sting had been playing with a jazz band called Last Exit. Andy Summers actually had a pretty strong background in jazz and had played with Zoot Money, an R&B group in England. You came straight from Curved Air, which was a prog rock band. On paper, all these elements don't seem to create a great recipe for new wave or punk music, but that was the movement the Police were born into. How did you guys make that work? And did you personally identify with the ethos of punk music?
Yes, I did, which was Burn It All Down. I had been struggling against the old system in Curved Air, where we're all working for the man. Hmm. Every time we did a photo session or a gig or anything, it cost us money. It went, you know, the record company would charge us. It was just not a business model that worked. And the scene was just suffocating with entropy. It was just all felt like it was winding down. Nothing new and exciting here, folks. And then this punk thing happened, and the music was crap, but the vibe was electric. And that's what the vibe, the enthusiasm was what inspired me. And also the do-it-yourself aspect of it, which was that we didn't have to go to the man. We didn't have to go to the record company. We could do it ourselves. I mean, I've raised 400 quid from a buddy of mine who was rich. We went down to a studio, recorded it. I took the tapes to RCA, printed up 2,000 singles. I learned that I should have printed up the sleeves first and dropped them off at the record plant, because then we got the 2,000 singles and then 2,000 paper sleeves, and had to, Sting and Henry and I had to sit there and pull them out of the white sleeve and put them into the picture sleeve. It was the DIY aspect of it, and also Sting too. It wasn't, and he was okay because it was a happening scene, even though it was an assault on his musical sensibilities. But one day, after we'd been struggling along, we ran into Andy Summers. Now, we were working as a rhythm section. We were the hot rhythm section in London. And in walks this guitarist on the session who just had all this music sophistication. And driving home that night, Sting was seething, having been reminded of what he picked up his instrument for, playing actual music. Oh God, I remember that now. And he was thinking, we got to get that guy. And I'm thinking, yeah, we're not going to get that guy. We can't afford that guy in a million years. Little did we know that Andy had discovered us. And long story short, this is all in my book, which is just coming out at the end of the month, by the way. Andy decided that, you know, me and that bass player, we've got something going on, but we need him in the band, and he accepts. And that's when the Police really began. And because we'd been playing crap songs that I wrote up until that point. And when Andy joined with his, you know, just wider vocabulary, that's when Sting started to write Roxanne, Message in a Bottle, and the rest of them. We didn't have any of that, any of those songs for the first year and a half.
Those days are over.
before we talk about the Police Deranged tour, I want to ask about your latest album, Police Beyond Borders, which is a fascinating record. It's a joint collaboration between you and the Indian composer Ricky Cage. The album features artists from across the globe interpreting the music of the Police, including the Soweto Gospel Choir from South Africa, the legendary Chinese rock icon Chui Jen, and many other notable guest artists. This record really speaks to your personal background, I think. You know, I believe you spent much of your early life in Europe, North Africa, and the Middle East. Tell us about this amazing new record, and did your life experiences plant the seeds for the sort of fusion we hear on this album?
Very much so. There's two of it, this album. There's Police Beyond Borders, which is the show that I'll be playing soon up in Carmel. And then, you know, which was an album, which is, you know, these orchestral derangements of Police songs where I messed up the form of them, but they're still recognizable with an orchestra and three soul singers on the mic. The album came out, did really well. It, you know, number two in the classical crossover chart, number three in the actual classical chart, which tells you how hard up they are for albums. I mean, where was Mozart that week? But, you know, then Ricky Cage, talking to Ricky Cage, with whom we had just won a couple of Grammys over the last 2 years, he said, send me over those backing tracks. So I sent over the orchestra, me, and the whole album, all the stems, and he found all these other incredible elements, global elements to thread in there. I mean, wait till you hear Every Breath You Take in Zulu. Yes, my background in growing up kind of globally, it felt like kind of a more personal project.
Let's take a break from my conversation with Stuart Copeland and listen to a track from his latest album, Police Beyond Borders, a collaboration with the composer Ricky Cage. This is King of Pain, featuring the Berklee Indian Ensemble. That was Stuart Copeland and Ricky Cage with King of Pain. And Stuart Copeland is my guest for the first half hour of this week's show. Let's return to our conversation. You mentioned the Police Deranged for Orchestra album and tour, which you'll be bringing here to Indiana on October 19th. As you mentioned, you'll have a 28-piece orchestra, three vocalists, and a rock trio here performing the music of the Police. And to me, this project merges two of perhaps the biggest threads in your musical career. One of those obviously being your work as a drummer for the Police, the other being your extraordinary career as a composer and arranger. You've scored, I think, over 50 films. You've worked with directors like Oliver Stone, Francis Ford Coppola. Beyond that, I think you composed an opera just recently based on the life of Tesla. Tell us a little more about the concept behind Police Deranged for Orchestra, and is this bringing together these two huge sides of your musical life and musical persona?
Very much so. My 20 years as a film composer, before as a hired gun, gave me an involuntary education in orchestra and how you use it and what are the amazing things that it could do. Now, I retired from film composing, I don't know, almost 15 years ago or something like that. I haven't scored a movie in that long. But those chops that I learned, and by the way, for your listeners who are musicians, piece of strange advice, don't be afraid of selling out. Because sometimes when you work for the man, or rather when you work for a session, and you have to go where your client or boss tells you to go, you learn things that you wouldn't have learned as an artist just following your own instincts. But that's a digression. So I learned how to use an orchestra and the amazing things that it could do. Meanwhile, I still enjoy banging stuff. And the song, and I've been doing these, you know, I've had commissions from the Pittsburgh Symphony, the Dallas, the Liverpool, you know, these, or they commission a piece and I go and perform it with them. And someone said, how about you throw in some Police songs there? And the penny dropped, and I had these derangements, which were carved up versions of Police songs that I had used in my film, a soundtrack for my own film about the police, using the Super 8 footage that I shot back in the day. Carving the music up for the movie gave me these strange derangements, and I orchestrated those versions for the show. And the show is a blast. Oh my gosh. It's, you know, if you can imagine with the three soul sisters on the mic, imagine it's like the Police sung by the Supremes with a mighty orchestra around it and me banging shit.
Finally, Stuart, I'm curious if you've gotten any word from your old bandmates about the Beyond Borders or the Deranged for Orchestra projects, or do you even care what they think about?
Oh, absolutely, I care. Yeah, it's critical to me, old Stingo. You know, I didn't send him, you know, he'll hear it one way or another if he's interested, but I did send him Tea in the Sahara in Chinese. I couldn't resist. It's so out. It's so out. I just wanted to imagine him going cross-eyed. And I also sent him this huge tome, the scores, you know, the conductor's scores of all of those songs, of 20 Police songs, fully orchestrated by my own fair hand, just by way of a brag, see what I can do, look what I've learned. And he was impressed. We get along really well. We are very tight. Although we are birds of a different feather, we appreciate what each other brought into our lives. And so, yes, and it matters a great deal to me what my two colleagues think.
The Police, Deranged for Orchestra. We'll be at the Palladium on Thursday, October 19th. Our listeners can purchase tickets and find more information at your website, stuartcopeland.net. Any final thoughts you want to share before we go?
Well, I'm looking forward to getting out there. Last time I was in Indiana, I was up at Manchester University there where they performed my opera, The Invention of Morel. And hopefully I'll see some of the cast and, you know, the folks who put that opera on there. I'm looking forward to being back in Indiana.
Thank you so much, Stuart. I appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thanks for listening.
Take care. See you at the Palladium. Let's hear one more classic track by the Police. From 1981, this is Invisible Sun.
I don't want to spend my time in hell, looking at
Cultural Manifesto will return after this short break. When you support WFYI, you're preserving Indiana history. I'm Kyle Long, the producer of Cultural Manifesto and Echoes of Indiana Avenue. During my time at WFYI, I've recovered and digitized over 100 historic recordings that would have otherwise been lost. Over the years, I've brought you previously unknown recordings featuring Duke Ellington's 1961 performance at the Indiana Jazz Festival.
Indiana itself has always been on the highest cultural level.
The earliest known work from Babyface. In Slovenian folk music from the Havel neighborhood in Indianapolis. If you love Hoosier music and Hoosier history as much as I do, show your support by going to wfyi.org/give. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. Harry Otaku is an Indianapolis hip-hop producer known for his soulful, sample-based production style. He's part of the hip-hop duo C-Lunch, and he's collaborated with a long list of Indianapolis MCs, from Oreo Jones to Sirius Black. In 2020, Harry released a horror-themed rap project titled The It Tape. The album was loosely inspired by the 2017 film adaptation of Stephen King's It. The It Tape includes guest appearances from prominent Indianapolis rappers and features some of Harry's best work as a producer. In the spirit of Halloween, I invited Harry to join me on this week's show to discuss the making of It Tape. Harry Otaku will join me in a moment. But first, let's hear a track from the project. This is Moment's Notice, featuring Kid Playing. Your flow cool, your flow cool. Lay your body in my arms, and you'll feel like I do. Keep your face to the sky, and your breath on it too. When you submerge, repeat these words, and be reborn into a new. Now say, your flow cool. And you'll feel like I do. Keep your face to the sky and your breath pointed to. When you submerge, repeat these words and be reborn into a new. Now say,
why is there no murders and missing kids? Darius is not like anything I've ever been in before.
That was Harry Otaku with Moment's Notice, featuring Kid Playing. You can find that track on Harry's horror-themed rap album, It Tape. And Harry Otaku is my guest for the second half of this week's show. Let's join our conversation. Harry, thank you so much for taking time to do this today. As you know, I'm a fan of your work, and it's great to connect with you again.
Appreciate you having me, man.
In the spirit of Halloween, we're going to revisit your 2020 release, The It Tape, an excellent collection of your beats featuring guest appearances from prominent Indianapolis rappers, including Fox the Legend, Sirius Black, and others. Your production on the It Tape includes samples from horror movies, and on the album art, you describe the project as terror-infused tunes to get your heartbeat racing. So first of all, can you give us an overview of what inspired you to create this horror-themed album, The It Tape?
Starting from the beginning, me and my brother Mitch, we went to the theaters to see the reboot because we were big. We were both like fans of the original film. Well, series. I found out a lot later it was actually a series. They just kind of clipped everything together to make it a movie. But we both, funny enough, grew up watching it, so we were both excited to see the remake. And sure enough, we go to theaters. We both have a great time, enjoy the film. And like while we're sitting there watching it, I'm like, bro, this movie's amazing. And he's like, yeah. He said, bro, why don't you make a tape out of this? I was like, word. He was like, yeah, like you're really good at spooky stuff. I was like, but I hate spooky stuff. He was like, yeah, but I know you're really good at it though. From seeing the film and him talking about, why don't you make a tape over this? I was kind of playing around with the thought, but also trying to figure out how I would go about it. And then from there, it was me looking at the overarching thing of why did I enjoy the film so much? And it was because of all the undertones of camaraderie. Because individually, these guys all have their traumas, things they're going through. but it's between the fears they had to face themselves and understanding and reassuring each other that the fears they could face together. So I thought that was a really dope thing, because at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, who do you got? If it ain't family, you got your friends. And a lot of us, family become friends. Friends become family. So I just really dug that concept and thought it was like, there's something to build around. And it was up from there. I've grown up around horror because my mother is a huge horror film buff. Like, I remember being a kid and going to see Jeepers Creepers with her, seeing all the Freddy Krueger films as well as Friday the 13th and Chucky. Like, my mama loves all this stuff. Also, fun fact, because I know I don't really talk about it often, like, I have narcolepsy. And one of the things about narcolepsy is you dream very vividly. So take in, you're a child, you're seeing a lot of outlandish imagery, and I mean, cue scene. Nightmares were very intense, and they, for the most part, sucked. So it was just something I never really stuck with. But that goes back to me seeing the It movie and seeing kids confronted by something that literally uses your nightmares to attack you and seeing them fight back. So I always thought that was cool and something that, like, kind of held on to me. So in a weird, like, roundabout way, it kind of became like a full circle moment for me, because it was something I got to celebrate something that meant so much to me as a kid, because it was like the means of which it kind of helped me, like, get out of my own head when stuff like that was happening for me.
Horror-themed music has a significant history in hip-hop. During the mid-1990s, horrorcore emerged as a genre. The term is most associated with the Grave Diggas, a sort of hip-hop supergroup with RZA and Prince Paul. There are other artists associated with the genre, Kool Keith, Ghetto Boys. Are you a fan of horrorcore? Was that an influence at all in this project?
Grave Diggers and the Ghetto Boys, in particular Scarface, because, like, I was raised on Scarface. Like, my mom was really big on me listening to Cube, Scarface, and Nas. Like, those are, like, her three. And, like, and me getting more into Scarface, like, I grew up at a place where I didn't even know Scarface was part of a group. Like, the first time I heard Scarface, I believe it was a Diary of a Mad Black Man, because I believe that's the one that had Seen a Man Down It. Like, that was, like, my first taste of Scarface. And then from there, Mom Playing Tricks on Me, which I didn't know, like, the original version is with the Ghetto Boys. So I was just like, they stole his song. And my brother's like, no, fool, he was, like, in that group. And I was like, what? And then from there, I was listening. I was like, ugh, it's graphic, it's deep, there's a lot of visceral details and stuff, but you can tell it's coming from a very honest, introspective place of just, like, surviving under circumstances that could, like, swallow you up in, like, the blink of an eye. And, like, on RZA's flip, like, man, it's no secret, like, I love the Wu-Tang Clan. Like, Wu-Tang Clan is, like, for the kids, and I love the Wu-Tang Clan. So when I saw RZA, like, deviating in a different group, I was curious that, you know, we all seen, like, the iconic cover with him with the gold teeth and the knife up to the eye. I was like, what's this about? And then just hearing him say all those outlandish stuff, like, it was like, on one side of me, I was like, wow. But on the other side, like, this is hilarious, because I just know they just in the studio clowning, and I've been in those kind of sessions before.
And Harry, like RZA, you're a sample-based producer, and there are a lot of samples on the It tape, both musical samples and samples from film dialogue. I know producers don't like to give away all their secrets, but tell us a little bit about the samples you were drawing from to pull this project together.
A lot of it was things that were eerie, couldn't even, like, really narrow down where a lot of it came from. Like, I have a vast collection of both vinyl records and just stuff I got in my travels. But there was a good folder of stuff I've always held onto. I was like, that just sounds weird, so I could do something with it. Like, I'll give you some, what are the ones I could share? So like track two, I believe, is a dude talking about them. Like, what are we going to do for summer? It's like, play Street Fighter. And the sample is actually from the original Nintendo version of Street Fighter. Like, I like dug it up because I was just like, I play too much Street Fighter not to do a Street Fighter sample on this. That just would, it just seems like a missed opportunity. So I found something, did some interpolating, and everybody got to eat.
Hey, what do you guys want to do tomorrow? I'll start my training. What training? Street Fighter. Is that how you want to spend your summer? Inside of an arcade?
Another good thing on there that I love the death out of, it's I believe it's called Have You Seen It, which I dang near want to say it was almost like the lead for everything of house. Like, it has to have this kind of vibe to it where it's just like, it's kind of got a little bit of unsettlingness to it. And that sample is actually from my bro Marshall Applewhite, who just got married like 2 to 3 days ago. So shout outs and congrats to him. And he is a person that does electronic techno, like house, all that kind of stuff. Like, Joe's a really dope dude, but like sometimes he gets in his real eerie back, and he was just sending me stuff to like listen to one time, and I was like, yo, what is this? And he was just like, oh, just something to mess around with, you know, some arpeggiators and whatnot, just, you know, fiddling. Did I say, yo, can I use this? He's like to make some hip-hop stuff. I was like, yeah. He's like, I mean, if you hear hip-hop and that, go for it. And then when it was done, I sent it to him. He's like, this is crazy. I was like, yeah.
Time to float.
You know, I mentioned some of the guest MCs who featured on the It Tape. Purnell from Pike, Fox the Legend, Jeremiah Stokes, Double A, Sirius Black. I'm curious what the response was when you were reaching out to people. Did they want to be on a horror-themed mixtape? Was that an easy idea to sell to the MCs you worked with?
Sirius, because I feel like it kind of, in its own way, helps, like, fits in his pocket as far as, like, you know, spirituality, dark magic, and all those kind of things. You know, seriously, probably shook hands with a witch or two in his travels. He was with it. He thought it was funny. Double A thought it was dope too. So did Fox Legend, because he really like dug the beats that were on there. Stokes, once again, because he loves Edgar Allan Poe, so he was just like, I'm all in. It, across the board, it was pretty easy to like, once they heard the beats and saw what I was trying to build up, they were all like, this sounds like fun. Between all those guys just being a part of it, like one dude I want to give a very special shout out to is a GMC Fo Show. He, I don't know, man, like, it's hard to describe his style. The dude's hilarious. He's really funny, and just the way he brings things together. Like, a few people, I want to say, like, a few people probably don't know who that is exactly, but I'm pretty sure if you look him up, you'll be like, I've heard this guy's voice before, because he has a lot of songs that people know just from them like traveling over the internet. But he was a person I approached. He's on the record with Double A, Sus. Like, it's his ad libs and some of his voice you hear in the background.
Hey, sweat, sweat. Look, said it's back to basics, back to the wall. Never had a back, my placement. Got a backpack for the raps and face it. I'm an educated artist with a knack for making every nigga for the inner room. Shaking their boats. I got a gun for a mouth and I'm making it shoot. I'm making do with a job is my main paycheck. Had to bust a couple fells, now they breaking their neck. Moving up a couple rows like a private show. My pride is growing.
One of my favorite tracks on the record is Things I've Seen, featuring Jeremiah Stokes, Sirius Black, and Joseph. Anything you want to say about that track?
I want to first say rest in peace to the homie Joseph, because Joseph was like one of the first people to like hear the record and lay down. Like, he kind of laid down the foundation for how everybody was going to approach about doing the hook and stuff, because that's just what he was feeling. He's like, oh, we're going to have some rap raps on here. I say, yeah. He said, let's do some spooky stuff around the tempo. I was like, all right. And man, he just came in there and knocked it out. It was really dope. And like, he was so enthused about it. I had a really good time working with him. And like, it was just a lot of fun. Like, he is very missed. Like, he was a good dude.
Let's take a break from my conversation with Harry Otaku and listen to Things I've Seen, featuring Jeremiah Stokes, Sirius Black, and Joseph.
Elegance to the benevolence of your irrelevant weapon. Jesus, what are you peddling? Who let the devil in? Stay out my thoughts with your telekinesis. What happened when the adrenaline gone? How many people had to die for you to end up a throne? A voice on the other end of the phone told me where to find a lock and a key made a skeleton bone.
I won't stay in the wrong place. This haunted house, lonesome town. Long stay in the wrong place. This haunted house, tossed around.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. If you're just tuning in, my guest is the Indianapolis hip-hop producer, Harry Otaku. We're discussing his horror-themed rap album, It Tape. In the spirit of Halloween, I invited Harry to join me on this week's show to discuss the making of It Tape. Let's return to our conversation. Any final thoughts you want to share? Any upcoming projects you have that you want to let people know about?
I just want to reiterate again, shout out to the homie GMC for sure for letting me in on those vocals and like giving me the clear. Also for all the homies that pitched in and participated in it, because I know like that was at a time where everybody was like literally on their treadmills running and had 1,000 things going on. My bro Mitch for like pushing me to like do it because he just thought something dope would come out of it, and it did. And more so like you, Kyle, for reaching out. And like, I don't know, man, like I've done a lot of interviews, Kyle, but you're the person I always feel like I have to be on my toes with, because you actually will say some stuff where I'm like, huh, he be paying attention. So I gotta like pay that back in respect and like make sure I'm paying attention too, which naturally does. But it's just like, it's an extra amount of attention to detail that you put into this stuff that I've always loved and appreciated. So I just wanted to say thank you,
Harry. This is the perfect album to listen to during the Halloween season. Folks can find the It Tape by Harry Otaku on Spotify, Apple Music, and other streaming services. Thank you so much for taking time to do this today, Harry. Appreciate it. And as always, I'm a fan.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you very much for having me.
We've got time for one more track from It Tape. This is Harry Otaku with Static, featuring Purnell from Pike.
Draining ears and noses and imposes unwarranted sex. Learn to text, map your ex, then let the easy part come next. They'll sing praises and mend extreme phases while white water runs down their throat. Together, forever. Where they all float. It's...
That's all the time we have for this week. Thank you to my guests, Stuart Copeland and Harry Otaku. Check out the Cultural Manifesto podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Cultural Manifesto is hosted and produced by me, Kyle Long. Thank you for listening.